This is Jim Engster. Coming today on Talk Louisiana, we will visit with Louis Hertham, the Baton Rouge actor who has done well in Hollywood for years, but now has a huge hit on his hands. He's in the cast as one of the main players in Westworld, which began its second season last night on HBO. We'll talk with Louis Hertham. Also, Melanie Bronfen of the Louisiana Policy Institute for Children on what's going on in her world as funding is perilous for a program that helps parents seeking assistance for child care and education. And we'll talk also with health science journalist Max Lugaveri. His book is Genius Foods: Become Smarter, Happier, and More Productive While Protecting Your Brain for Life. Now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Engster, and thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. And if you're dialing in Baton Rouge, please dial 297-5633, 297-5633. You can send an email to talk@talklouisiana.org. And a reminder that this also is our spring member fest. And if you'd like to contribute to WRKF and you like this hour of programming, we'd like to hear from you at 855-893-9753, 855-893-9753. We begin with the incomparable Louis Hertham, one of the fine actors in America, who is a Baton Rougean who has gone to Hollywood as in almost 40 years ago. And he is now part of something that is an amazing phenomenon, Westworld, which began its second season last night. And Louis Hertham, I can only imagine the attention you're getting right now.
Yeah, there's quite a bit of it, Jim. You're right, and it is a quite a phenomenon, frankly.
How do you explain this?
Well, I guess I'd have to go back. First of all, you have the 1973 film that the series was created. Jim, I just woke up. You got to hang with me here. This robot is still glitching a little.
It is what? It's 7:09 in California.
Yeah, but I got up early. I usually am up by this time, but I got up early so that I wouldn't be quite as tongue-tied. But I see that it didn't work.
You
stayed up kind of late.
You're doing fine.
Yeah, thanks, buddy. No, the series is based off the film, the 73 film by Michael Crichton. So you have that following built in. But I think that, myself included, we didn't expect the genius of this project and the scope of it. Because, quite frankly, the movie was pretty simple, really, when you think about it. You know, it's a theme park with robots, and, it seems like it's just the most incredible place to visit, and then all hell breaks loose. But it all happens, in an hour and 45 minutes. So I think that the other part that attracts people is the watching this show is not this is not some a show that you can just sit down and watch and go, oh, that was great, and gives you some sort of mindless entertainment for an hour each week. You have to work. I mean, they test you, and this is a massive puzzle and riddle. And I think people are really attracted to that, but I also think that there is an element of the fact that this is a cautionary tale. Artificial intelligence is very real in this day and time, and this show sort of says, hey, folks, take a look at what we're doing, because maybe it's not the best idea. There's no way to stop it. I mean, it's going to happen. But so I think there's an element of that. And it's just different, Jim. It's like nothing that's ever been on TV before.
The guest is Louis Hertham, the star of Westworld, a Baton Rougean who's done exceptionally well in one of the toughest places in the world to succeed. And we'll go to the phone lines in just a moment, 877-217-5757 or 297-5633. Judy Bergeron yesterday did a fine job in The Advocate profiling Lewis and Westworld. The writing in season one, the robots malfunctioned, triggering trouble and terror. The humans were clearly in control. In the new season, the roller coaster is running upside down, and the episodes are defined not by control, but by chaos. 877-217-5757. Sophie in Baton Rouge, South Baton Rouge. Hi, Sophie. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Oh, good morning. I didn't realize I was going to be on the show. I just wanted to make a donation.
All right. Well, I tell you what, you hang tight, and we'll let you make a donation, and we're glad you're listening to WRKF. Well, Lewis, we need to put you on more often if we get people like Sophie. And that is great. And this is overnight recognition for you. You've been on with us before, and you've done this in 1978. Lewis started his career in local theater doing advertisements, and some call it overnight success, but there were a lot of peaks and valleys along the way.
Yes, sir. There sure was. But that's the way this career usually works. There are people that get that break earlier. To me, especially in the last decade, I've worked quite regularly and I've worked on some great shows. But yes, when you become a part of something this big, it does feel like an overnight success. I mean, everything ramps up like literally overnight. So it's a bit odd, but it's great. I'm not complaining.
Well, you shouldn't. And I know a lot of people are very proud of you, and for good reason. But for years, Lewis was in major productions, and he's appeared in CSI Miami, New York. Also, you had that recurring role in Murder, She Wrote. Without that, would all of these good things happening to you now have been possible?
Well, I think so, Jim, because Murder, She Wrote was really my first break to get a steady gig in Hollywood. But after Murder, She Wrote, I took 10 years off and produced films. I say I took 10 years off of acting. I still acted in my films primarily, but I wasn't pursuing acting the way I was before, because producing is such a hard road to hoe as well. Takes a lot of time and concentration. So I spent from about 95 to 05, and I produced 6 films in that time. And so I kind of started over, came back to Baton Rouge in late 05, early 06 to help my sister Claire take care of her mom. And the business was booming, so I started working again a lot as an actor there. And then after her mom passed, I came back to L.A. and, hit the ground running. So I think so. But certainly Murder, She Wrote was invaluable because of the, the experience that it gave me, and just seeing what it was like to be gainfully employed in Hollywood, which is the goal always,
How did you get the part of Peter Abernathy?
Well, my agent called me one day, my manager actually, and he said, Lou, we got an audition for you this week for Westworld. And I went, Westworld? I said, is it a movie? Or he goes, no, it's a TV series. I said, is it based on the old movie? He goes, yeah. I was just like, oh, fantastic. He goes, and you're going to have to play about 3 different characters. And I went, oh, man, that's the best. I was so excited just to know that this film was going to be made into something, because it was so far ahead of its time. And so I auditioned for it. I went in initially and auditioned, not knowing much at all about these robots. I asked the assistant casting director in the first audition is, do you want to know these are robots or not? And she goes, no, they're just like humans, except when they're having issues. And that's when we can tell. And the scene that I auditioned with, that all males auditioned with, and I would imagine a version all females auditioned with who are playing hosts, had this same scene, and it was a version of the scene that you see me do with Dr. Ford in the pilot. The characters were different, the dialogue was different, but it was basically Dr. Ford analyzing this host. So After the first audition, Deanna Brigidi said, come back for John Papsidera and Lisa Joy and, you know, bring some physicality to it. So what you see me do in the pilot episode is pretty much what I brought into the audition and got the part. It took about 5 weeks before I found out, I think it was. I had forgotten all about it. I thought I didn't get the role.
And how quickly did you learn that this was going to be something that would take a life of its own?
I think probably the first day on the set, which happened to be my first scene was I think Judy had mentioned in the article that it was with Dr. Ford. Is that actually my first scene was when they put me in cold storage with 50 other naked people. So, in spite of the fact that my first scene was, you know, in my birthday suit, there was just something. I mean, the pedigree of the show, the from the top to the bottom, from J.J. Abrams and Lisa and Jonah to the, you know, the music, the cinematography. I mean, just every aspect of it was just top-notch, and there was just a feel. You just knew this was going to be big.
And now I'm sure you'll ride this as far as it goes.
I will. And, you know, the thing is, you just never know. You never know in this world, and it's getting very chaotic. People are in store for, I think, one of the most extraordinary seasons of television ever filmed. I really do.
Well, we're going to talk and some anything. More with Lewis Hertham, who's joining us from Los Angeles, where it's beautiful every day, and he is smiling. Once again, the world was watching with earnest the premiere of second season of Westworld, and we'll be back. 877-217-5757 is your number. Back after this 90-second pause on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us. Ali Baltazar and Becca Dill are producing today, and your number for Talk Louisiana is 877-217-5757 or 297-5633, 225-297-5633. We're going to rejoin Lewis Hertham joining us from Los Angeles in just a moment, but a point of personal privilege that this is day five of our Spring Member Fest, and we'd like for you to support WRKF if you enjoy the programming. The programming is made possible through listeners like you, and the number to call toll-free is 855-893-9753 to make a contribution, 855-893-9753, if you'd like to contribute to WRKF. As I do the show, I'm drinking from my teal WRKF 16-ounce coffee mug with the shimmery glaze and a beautiful cup, and it has WRKF 89.3 Discover with us on it. And if you'd like to have a cup just like this one and be very good to WRKF for just $13 a month, you can do so. 855-893-9753. And once again, our number for the show to talk with the incomparable Lewis Hertham is 877-217-5757. Lewis plays Peter Abernathy in Westworld. He's the father to Evan Rachel Wood's Dolores on season two, the drama series set in an adult amusement park. It premiered last night. What are the early reviews from the premiere?
Again, I haven't seen any this morning because my first order of business was you, Jim, and all your lovely listeners. But there have been quite a few reviews. They sent, I think, the first five episodes out to quite a few press outlets, and they've been great. I haven't heard any bad ones yet. So I think I think the press is enjoying it, and they're saying that it's worth it. And I think some have said, I haven't read a whole bunch of them. I'll tell you the truth, Jim, last year I followed a lot of the theories, the fan theories, but this year I'm not doing that because I'm a fan of the show just like the rest of, you know, all the people watching, and I like to, you know, because there's quite a bit that I don't know. I only know anything that happens in the episodes I was in.
Well, I'm looking at the art section of the New York Times, page one, and there's Evan Rachel Wood on page one of the arts section. And
I love it.
The two of you, I'm sure, have gotten to know each other well. It appears to be the appropriate chemistry between two of the big stars who are father and daughter in this show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really remarkable. She and I, the chemistry we have is pretty amazing, and I think people are going to see it in spades this season. But the very first time I met Evan was doing the porch scenes in the pilot. Pardon me. And, of course, as people will realize, those porch scenes, mm-hmm. you know, they all happen in the very same place. So we shot them the same day, all of them. So we went from, you know, me telling her how I am what I am because of you, and that very tender moment between us, to me completely freaking out about the photograph. So we did that all in one day. And, yeah, just from the very beginning, there's just some chemistry. And so now when we do scenes, and if it happens to be an emotional scene, the director will be, well, while we're rehearsing, you know, we're kind of, you know, like, save it for then. And we're like, no worries, it'll be there. And it always is. It's just remarkable. She's a remarkable, remarkable actress. What she is doing on this show, and I think people, it's so subtle, and I don't mm-hmm. know if people realize how difficult what she's doing is, but it's incredible.
Now, Claire asks about your voice, which you've made a good living with it, and when I listen to it, I don't hear an accent. But in Los Angeles, did they say you have a Southern accent?
Well, yes, sometimes. Of course, I've been here, like you said, you reminded me, almost 40 years. It's been 36 years, to be exact. And I guess it just sort of falls away. But, of course, when I come back home to visit, or even mentioning the fact that I used to have an accent, may make it come back. But no, people don't hear it so much now. But if they say, well, you don't have an accent, and I'll say, no, I guess I don't. You know, and then they go, oh, I just heard it. It comes and goes, but, you know, thankfully I can lose it when I need to, because obviously sometimes I have to make absolutely sure I don't have any accent.
All right. John in New Roads asks, how much of Westworld's popularity is linked to the graphic nudity of attractive people? That's John in New Roads.
Well, John, that's a great question, although I have no stats on that, but I'm sure that there is a certain amount of people that watch for that reason, but it's probably small, because I don't think the amount of nudity is enough to put someone through the grueling test of Westworld if you're only watching for that reason. It's, you know, but it is certainly a factor. I'm sure that fans of the certain actors and actresses that would love to see them naked, maybe, but I doubt anybody's tuning in to see me naked, that's for sure.
You've got a few other projects that are ongoing. Tell us about those.
Well, Judy mentioned in the article, and thank you, Judy, if you're listening, for that wonderful article. Judy, as you have, Jim, have been so good about supporting my career, and I really appreciate it. I did an episode of Lucifer, which IMDb, you know, which a lot of us depend on, originally said was going to air tonight. So, and I believe Judy said that it will not be airing tonight. It might air next week. I don't know. Check your local listings, but I'm just not quite sure when that show is going to air. But I did a film with Johnny Depp that is called Labyrinth, and again, not sure. I would imagine it's going to start playing this year sometime. I did one called Cadaver with Shay Mitchell, another one called I Still See You, which was derived from a book called Break My Heart 1,000 Times, mm-hmm. with Bella Thorne and Dermot Mulroney. I think it's going to be a really extraordinary film. It's based on a really interesting concept. That's about it. I did a Hawaii 5-0 is like a cameo recently. It's back. I, just like most actors, while I'm between seasons on Westworld, waiting for the phone to ring.
All right. And this question almost inevitably comes up when you're on the show. This one from Don, asking your relation to Harold Hertham.
Yes, Harold was my dear, dear uncle, my father's brother, and one of the best friends I ever had. He was a lovely man, generous man. And of course, those that knew him knew that nobody was funnier. Nobody I've ever met in my life was a funnier, more wonderful man. I miss him every day.
And he was in some rather substantial productions himself.
Yes, he was. The Doctor in Forrest Gump. He was in JFK. He was in Blaze. He did Blaze with Ron Shelton, and who directed Paul Newman in the film. And ever since that film, he was in every film that Ron Shelton made after that. Tin Cup, and I can't remember all of them,
yeah.
But Tin Cup. Anyway, but Ron loved him, and usually when Harold walked in the room to audition, if he wasn't right for the part, they would find a way to put him in the movie. Harold had two films booked when he passed. He had two films, you know, that he had booked that mm-hmm. he was unable to shoot. So he would have had quite a long resume by now had he lived. He died in 98.
Well, we're going to spend a few more minutes with Lewis Hertham, who's now in season two of Westworld. Your number, 877-217-5757. And once again, we'd like to hear from you if you are inclined to show your support for WRKF. This is a perfect time to do it. We always like it when it happens this hour. 855-893-9753. That's 855-893-WRKF. We'll return with Lewis Hertham after this brief pause on 89.3. WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us. Ali Baltazar and Becca Dill producing, and Lewis Hertham with us for a few more minutes, and then we'll go to Melanie Bronfen of the Child Care Assistance Program, and she has some interesting points about funding that is on the block for her program. 877-217-5757. And again, if you'd like to contribute, we'd like to hear from you. 855-893-9753. Bobby in South Baton Rouge. Hi, Bobby. You're on the air with Baton Rouge proud Lewis Hertham. Hi, Bobby.
It's actually Buddy.
Okay. Sorry.
How you doing, Lewis?
Buddy Bonacaz. I know that voice.
Yeah, I know Buddy. I know Buddy well. He's a guy who went toe-to-toe with Bobby Knight many years ago.
My claim to fame. But anyway, I just wanted to call and tell people what a great guy Lewis is, and he's very proud of his Louisiana heritage. And one of the things that maybe distinguishes him from a lot of people and that get a little fame, he's a very humble guy, and I think that's an admirable quality.
Yes, indeed.
And I'm happy to call him a friend.
He wears a success
Thank you,
well.
Buddy.
And it's great to hear from you, Buddy Bonacaz.
Yeah. All right.
I bet you'll never forget March 28th, 1981.
No one will ever let me forget it, in case maybe Alzheimer's. That's about it.
All right. I was there.
Thank you, buddy.
The Cherry Hill Inn, of all places, because he and Bobby Knight got in a fight after LSU
really?
Played Indiana. Yeah, Buddy Bonacaz and Bobby Knight got in a fight. Maybe that's why I called him Bobby.
What?
Yes.
Well, Buddy, I did not know that, and I must be one of the few that didn't know about this, because Buddy is like the most laid back guy that I know. And fighting Bobby, I got to find out about this. Does anybody have it on camera?
No, but I tell you, a few of us saw it, and it was an interesting exchange between Big Bad Bob and Lewis Buddy Bonacaz, but we'll bring him back to talk about it. It is a story that will probably take a few minutes to tell, but it is worth retelling all these years later.
Well, listen, I got to say thank you to Buddy. Buddy is truly, one of the finest people I've ever met, and I mean that from the heart. And when I came to town in late 95 to put together funds for making my first movie, Favorite Son, I mean, Buddy is the guy that made it happen, quite frankly. And I'll be indebted to him forever. for that.
He is a fine man.
He's just a great. Yes, he is.
As are you, and
yes, he is.
And we're so
Thank
happy
you.
That you're doing well, Lewis. And Lewis, in addition to everything else, and I don't say this lightly, I think he is probably the foremost authority now on the JFK assassination of anybody in the world. And it would take years to fully detail all that you're involved with on that front. But how did you develop this passion? What caused that?
Well, you know, I believe it or not, I mean, it intrigued me even at 7 years old when it happened because, I don't know why. I just it just was such a sad time even for, you know, children. You know, everybody loved, well, I say everybody, that's obviously not true, but, you know, children loved President Kennedy. He just seemed like such a fine man. And you see these videos of young people crying after hearing the news. And I was literally watching the television by myself when Oswald was shot. And I ran into the other room where my parents and neighbors were sitting there. You know, everybody was, congregating and talking about the sadness of the event. And I said, someone else just got shot. And you know, so there, you know, that shows how attracted to the madness of that thing that I was. And to be honest with you, it was mainly about Oswald. He just didn't seem like a murderer to me. He just, something didn't, even at that age, it just didn't seem right. And it really wasn't until I was always interested in the case, but about the late 80s that I started really researching it, and just out of curiosity. And you know, I know there's still a lot of people that don't believe in conspiracy, but there's absolutely no question in my mind. You can't, the information is out there, and there's a lot of misinformation. There's a lot of ridiculous theories, like, you know, that the Secret Service agent in the car behind him accidentally shot him, or the driver shot him, or somebody from the blimp, or the storm drain. Yeah, you know, those are all just ridiculous. But when you get down to the bare facts, and they're out there, I'll tell you another thing, Jim. You know how the all the files were to be released last October, and President Trump said he was going to do it, and then at the last minute he didn't do it. Well, the fact that he didn't do it should have been a huge event in the press. I mean, we've waited 54 years for this, and it just disappeared. And it just sort of shows that this is not something that the press is willing to talk about. And the true story, and I through my research, I've literally met people that knew Lee, that were in illusionary war training at Nag's Head, North Carolina. It's where he learned Russian, to speak Russian. He did not defect to Russia. He was sent to Russia by our government, by the military, and so there's a lot that's not known to the general public.
Well, we will certainly talk to you about this and more, but congratulations on your continuing success with Westworld. Lewis Hertham, who went to Hollywood 36 years ago and now is sitting on top of Westworld, and we're happy that he's doing Baton Rouge proud. Thank you, Lewis.
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate it, buddy.
See you soon. We're joined now by Melanie Bronfen of the Child Care Assistance Program. She's been doing this for about 5 years, and this is a program that many rely on, working parents seeking child care and educational assistance. And Melanie, how is the funding going for this entity right now?
Thank you. I'm afraid to say not too well. And just a little point of correction, I'm actually with a private nonprofit, the Louisiana Policy Institute for Children, but we are advocating on behalf of the Child Care Assistance Program, as you say. And this is a program that is for families who are working in school or in job training, and it provides subsidies so families can afford child care, reliable, quality care for their children, for their young children, so they can get to work. And I don't know that how many people who don't have young children realize that child care costs almost as much, and in some parishes more, than a public college tuition. But parents, of course, haven't had 18 years to save right out of that when they have young children trying to afford childcare. And so it is very challenging for parents And it is a program that's been cut and cut and cut, but we were serving 40,000 children 8 years ago, and today we are serving 15,000.
So it's gone from 40 to 15,000, and when you say it's been cut by whom?
Been cut, I'm sorry, thank you for the clarification, by our state legislature, our governors over the years, the funding coming from the state funding. We spend less than one half of 1% of our state general funds on early care and education in Louisiana. And that is because, including our pre-K programs, our early school program across the state.
All right. Well, this statistics indicate that 1 in 6 Louisiana workers with young children quit a job due to child care issues, and 1 in 13 with young children are fired due to child care issues. So it's a big issue, and one that many battle with, grapple with on a continuing basis. And the state, in austere times, has to cut somewhere, and this is where some of the cuts have been made, much to the chagrin of Melanie Bronfen and others who have benefited from this program. So what's the next step?
Well, the next step is, and I would note that many business organizations, including chambers across the state, the Louisiana Association of Business and Industry, our statewide chamber, all have come out saying this is a critical workforce issue that we need to attend to for not just our children and our parents, but for our employers as well. Our report, Losing Brown, showed that there's a $1.1 billion loss for the Louisiana economy, and that our employers actually lose $816 million a year for the reasons you described, the fact that there are absences and employee turnover due to these absences of parents and being late and all because of childcare breakdowns.
All right, and for those who would like more information about what you do and the assistance that is available, how do they contact you, Melanie?
We, our website is www.policyinstitutela.org, and there's a lot more information on our website about these issues.
All right, policyinstitutela.org. And thank you for joining us today, and good luck. It's certainly a worthy reason for funding, and hopefully things will get better. But as we know, the budget right now is in chaos, and this is one of those areas that is facing potential elimination. PolicyInstituteLA.org to find out more from Melanie Bronfen, who heads the Child Care Assistance Program with the Policy Institute of Louisiana. And note as we head to the break in just a moment that if you're standing by and have not contributed to WRKF in a while, or if it's time to renew, we'd like to hear from you right now. And there are many options available that you'll find out if you call 855-893-9753. And one of those is the WRKF coffee mug that I'm using right now as we speak. Beautiful, teal-colored coffee cup, as Karen Henderson says, with a shimmery glaze. And if you'd like the coffee cup and know that you've done a worthy deed in keeping one of the great entities that's been around for 38 years in this community alive and well, you can call right now, 855-893-9753. It's $13 a month for the coffee cup for 1 year, and you'll be a sustaining member as well and be available for all the drawings that are ongoing. We've reached the halfway point and then some in this drive, and we need to wrap it up soon. We'd like to finish it early, and we can if you keep those phones ringing, 855-893-9753. You're listening to Talk Louisiana on WRKF, and we'll return after this pause. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us, 877-217-5757. Our guest is health science journalist Max Lugavere. He's a filmmaker, a television personality, in addition to being the director of the film Breadhead, the first ever documentary about dementia prevention through diet and lifestyle. His book is Genius Foods: Become Smarter, Happier, and More Productive While Protecting Your Brain for Life. Dr. Oz says Genius Foods can help us reset mental agility, cope with stress, battle brain fog, and even smack back dementia. So it seems like a logical answer, but how important is it as far as our diet and our brain health, Max? Do you think this is something that is the perhaps the most essential component to preventing dementia?
You know, Jim, I believe that it is certainly one of the most important aspects. You know, diet and lifestyle are heavily related to many of the chronic diseases that we're seeing burdening modern society. It's a, you know, chronic disease is something that I actually say we've created here in America, and we're now starting to export. So, you know, when it comes to the brain, for a long time, the brain was thought to be what's called immunologically privileged from the rest of the body. It was thought to sit in sort of the ivory tower of the blood-brain barrier, which sort of acts as a selective gate, which controls communication between the body and the brain. But now we know that the same factors that drive obesity and type 2 diabetes also seem to do a number on the brain. And these are diseases for which, you know, there is no particularly meaningful treatment when talking specifically about Alzheimer's disease and other forms of dementia. So I explore a notion in my book where some researchers are starting to refer to Alzheimer's disease as type 3 diabetes. And in the book, I basically go into depth on this hypothesis, and I talk about the ways that you might actually be able to prevent type 3 diabetes.
Max Lugavere is our guest, a health science journalist. His book is Genius Foods, and he has coined this phrase, type 3 diabetes. What are the major culprits when we're trying to prevent this?
So it's absolutely added sugar, which has now been squeezed into every crevice of the modern food supply. I mean, we could look at our tomato sauces. We could look at, you know, ketchup, which is mostly high fructose corn syrup. Even breads now have added sugar in them. So I think it's really important to become aware of the sugar content of our food and to eat as little of it as possible. The other foods that I highlight as being toxic and particularly damaging to the brain, which is made largely of fat, are the unhealthy oils that have become ever-present in our food supply. I call them in the book the ominous oils. And these are oils like canola oil, corn oil, soybean oil. These oils are heavily industrially produced, and they went from making up virtually 0% of our caloric intake 100 years ago to now being significant calorie contributors. And these oils, because of the nature of how they're produced, they're usually oxidized, which is a form of chemical damage that creates inflammation in our bodies. And the brain is highly vulnerable to inflammation and what's called oxidative stress. In fact, aside from increasing one's odds of developing diseases like Alzheimer's disease, which are characterized in part by having an excessive amount of inflammation in the brain, inflammation is now being linked to depression, to brain fog, to anxiety. So if your brain isn't working the way that you feel like it's meant to work, inflammation could very well be at the root cause of these symptoms. And I talk about in the book all of the ways of, you know, taking the fire extinguisher to inflammation through food.
And what's the best way to do that?
Well, it's certainly avoiding these oils and added sugar. But then also, you know, I talk a lot about the fact that our diets have become so heavily grain-based. You know, 60% of the calories that we consume today come from just three plants. These plants are wheat, corn, and rice. And the fact that we've based our diets around these energy-rich and relatively nutrient-poor foods, it's led to widespread nutrient deficiency. 90% of Americans now are deficient in at least one essential nutrient. So, you know, when it comes to inflammation, our bodies are very good at, you know, repairing against the damage incurred, but only when we feed our bodies and our brains the right ingredients to do that. So when you go to the supermarket and you're, you know, going shopping, I recommend shopping around the perimeter of the supermarket and really opting for colorful veggies, fiber-rich vegetables, and really avoiding the processed foods, which are made with any number of permutations with these three plants, wheat, corn, and rice, which have become ever-present in the food supply. But I like to remind people that there is no human need for grain. And, you know, it becomes really important to opt for the foods that provide the nutrients that we know that we're not getting enough of. So I talk about research out of Rush University that found that people who eat one large salad every single day, a salad constructed of dark leafy greens like spinach, arugula, romaine lettuce, kale, actually have brains that look about 11 years younger on brain scans. So this to me is really empowering research. And we know that vegetables contain really important nutrients that are the exact nutrients that Americans are not getting enough of.
Max Lugavere is our guest. Genius Foods is his book. Last week we heard from Dr. Mark Hyman, who had his theory that has been embraced by many, that many of the health issues we have are related to the gut. And you believe that sugar and the gut don't go together very well. Why not?
They don't go together very well. You know, you have this universe, essentially, of microorganisms that live in your large intestine. This collection of bacteria is being referred to now as the microbiome. And what I say in my book, Genius Foods, is you breed what you feed. And we've got, you know, very beneficial bacteria down there that when we eat certain foods like fibrous vegetables, they churn out a number of very beneficial chemicals, including vitamins, that enter our bloodstream, make their way up to our brains, and make us happier. But if you're eating lots of sugar and processed foods and refined carbs and unhealthy oils, you're essentially feeding the wrong types of bacteria. And when you feed those communities of bacteria, what happens is they start to proliferate,
mm-hmm.
You know, because their food is more abundant, and so they're reproducing, they're having a party, essentially. And you really want to starve those bacteria of the kinds of foods that they enjoy most, while giving the more beneficial bacteria the edge in that you know, highly competitive environment of your large intestine. So that means avoiding unhealthy oils, processed foods, sugars, packaged foods, things like that, and reaching instead for fiber-rich vegetables, dark leafy greens, kale, spinach, arugula, jicama, leeks, garlic, things like that. I mean, these are foods that add so much flavor to our dishes, you know. I mean, I know in Louisiana, you guys have amazing food, and garlic and onions and things like that, aside from adding wonderful flavors to our foods, they're also powerful sources of food for our beneficial bacteria.
All right. 877-217-5757. If you'd like to get under the wire with our guest, the book is Genius Foods from Max Lugavere, and it's Kristen in Oak Hills asking about coconut oil. What about it? Is coconut oil good or bad?
You know, coconut oil is it's great in certain contexts. So I'm not a big fan of you know, adding lots of fat to the diet. I think it's more important to really focus on you know, going after protein requirements, which is actually the most satiating macronutrient. So when you're eating protein is much better at basically fixing your hunger levels than eating lots of fat. That being said, coconut oil provides a very clean burning energy source to the brain. So for people that are experiencing a little bit of brain fog and maybe have experienced cognitive decline, there is some mm-hmm. evidence, and I'm not going to say that there's a robust body of evidence to really provide concrete evidence, but there's some evidence that suggests that the kinds of fats that are mm-hmm. present in coconut oil can actually help to provide a very clean burning fuel source to the brain.
All right.
In that sense, coconut oil is unique and it's healthy.
We're short on time, but the question, not unexpected, what about a diet rich with meat products? Is that good?
With meat, quality is everything. So in my book, Genius Foods, I don't recommend factory-farmed, grain-fed meat, but I do recommend grass-fed, preferably organic. But when it comes to, you know, getting the most nutritional bang for your buck, I think really looking for 100% grass-fed, that's very important. And when it's grass-fed, I do consider grass-fed red meat a health food, especially for premenopausal women. I mean, it's the most important source of iron, as well as a bevy of other important nutrients.
The book is Genius Foods from Max Lugavere. Thank you for joining us today, Max.
Thank you, Jim, so much.
Hope we talk again soon. And a reminder that we'd like to hear from you, as in right now. If you're so inclined, please give us a call, 855-893-9753. That's 855-893-9753. And show your support for WRKF, your beacon of light on public radio in Baton Rouge. We're back tomorrow, same time, same place. Until then, for Becca and Allie, I'm Jim. Stay tuned.
For a podcast of today's show, go to WRKF.org or find the Talk Louisiana podcast on the WRKF app. We welcome your feedback and topic suggestions. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Talk Louisiana is a production of WRKF in Baton Rouge.